Welcome to the Shutdown 4K.
That's fine. That was perfect.
I was already thinking ahead, like several sentences ahead. And you know what? Let's just start week 7's recap with an evil laugh, right? Like a really...
Well, I want to go in a slightly different direction, if that's okay.
Yeah, you can.
Well, it was a stressful week for a lot of people. A lot of people who probably listen to this program. And this is a little bit of a throwback, but I thought it might be nice to bring back ASMR voice. Just sort of, like, soothe everybody. Let everybody know everybody's going to be okay. So, with your permission, if you're listening, I just want you to close your eyes. Feel very relaxed. Mm-hmm. Feel your heartbeat. Feel the hairs on your arms. Stand up and lie back down. And I want you to picture yourself sitting in a chair in front of a lake. Beyond that lake is a mountain shrouded in very gentle, very cool mist. It's very, very quiet. You can't hear anything but the sound of my voice. And a heron flies by, glides over the water, not touching the water. No sound whatsoever. And it glides up to this beautiful, verdant mountain. Everything is just so still, so peaceful. And then the heron lands on the mountain. And suddenly, the top of the mountain explodes. And you think, oh, this must be some sort of volcano. And the sky grows dark. And suddenly you notice that it's raining, but it's not raining water or even ash or magma. It's raining human bone. At least you think it's human. You can't tell for sure. Tibias and femurs and patellas and sternums. Those little bones in your ear. And all of a sudden, bodies start to float to the top of the lake. Hundreds of them, mummified perfectly. Unsolved murders from a serial killer who was never caught because he was the chief of police the whole time. And then you see that heron flying back, gliding, on fire, squawking in pain, collapses in front of you and coughs up an envelope. The envelope is strangely perfectly intact, and you open it. And the only thing the envelope says on the inside is, "Welcome to Blood Week."
Y'all, that was all off the top of the dome, too. Ryan didn't write none of that down. We don't do writtens on this show.
No.
Do you feel better? Do you feel better?
We record.
Yeah, man,
all
I feel real soothed.
I do actually.
See,
you know, like,
I feel centered and in. Yeah. I feel real tranquil now.
We got three dads in the podcast. Tell me, like, a good 30 seconds into that. When the body started popping up, you're just like, I don't care. This is soothing. You keep going.
It's quiet. It doesn't matter.
I know. Like a younger, less sleep deprived person would have been like, well, that is disturbing because my brain is paying attention to it. Like the sleep starved dad brain is like, no, ride this. Ride this straight to hell. Take it down.
See if I give a shit.
Yeah, I don't care. Those bodies aren't real. And if they are, you know what? I don't have to clean them up. Oh, you know who I have to clean up? This house.
It's Blood Week.
It ain't on my property, is it?
We got our terrifying Blood Week. Sacrifices were made. Garments were rent asunder. Temples fell. The sun burnt out. It was beautiful.
Crawl Space Week. Crawl Space Week.
An entire weekend of Friday night.
And here's the thing. You're going to say that this weekend began, this Blood Week began, with Clemson losing to Syracuse on the road. And you're wrong. Because what happened on Wednesday, October 11th, Spencer Hall and Jason Kirk?
A 3-score favorite lost.
The 4-1 Troy right. Trojans at the time.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Lost to the South Alabama Jaguars, who were at the time 1-4, 19-8.
Meaning in a single weekend, LSU beat Auburn and suffered all sorts of new transitive losses.
So that's when the wisest of us should have known that danger and tumult were on the way, but we didn't because we're dumb. That's why you listen to this podcast. That's why we do this podcast.
I would tell you this, that if you did not, like, if you were like, okay, well, when did things really start, you know, like going sideways? Okay. Cause you know, I don't know, Troy losing, that's something, right? But it's not exactly like, oh man, roof's caving in, right? Like we should have known something was going on. No, when you really should have known something was going on. Like, all right, and Clemson gets an injury. You're like, oh, okay, maybe this is really something here. Okay, even then, I could say maybe you should just cool your jets. You really should have known that something was going on when Wazoo lost by scoring only 3 points.
Yeah.
At Cal.
I think if you tell somebody, okay, Cal at home is going to upset Washington State, they'll say, I can see it. What was the score, like 56-55? And you say, oh, no, Cal only scored 37. Huh, okay, so Wazoo scored 36 then.
You got one of the digits, right?
The correction to that is where you get them. Because when people were waking up Saturday morning and seeing the final score, it was like, hang on, I got to look this up at another site because that can't be right. Like, no, the notification can't be right. I gotta go drive down there and see the scoreboard myself. Like, that doesn't make any sense at all. And that was when it was clear we were in. And like this weekend, like, you know, college football internet veteran people, like we always say, like, oh, this could be the big one, you know. And like if you're just getting into this sport, it probably sounds pretty weird, but like this happens once a year. You can go back every single year. There is at least one weekend like this where just everything falls apart. And if your team makes that out of it, if your team wins ugly, awesome. You survived. But like, you know, for about a month now, we've been saying this week is coming. And it finally arrived.
Now, there are a couple things that you should say for all of us. Okay.
The biggest upset of the weekend, I guess in terms of profile, it's probably not the one I would say this is the most unusual one, right? Clemson losing at Syracuse. And I will correct everybody. We got a little bit of credit for merely seeing this as possible, right? We did. This is how shocking I think it was to everybody else that we said, you know, they're squirrely. You got to keep an eye on Syracuse. And you know, don't give us too much credit for that. One, we're wrong. Just assume that we're wrong.
Yeah.
If we get anything right.
And also, we have been like vigorously overrating Syracuse for about a solid year now. We were bound to get it right at some point.
Right. This is a blind squirrel finding a nut. All right. Admittedly, a really fortuitously timed nut, but still, don't give us too much credit for it. However, it's not that weird. It's not that weird for a lot of reasons. Okay. One, last year, who did Syracuse tattoo in a blowout at home in Syracuse? Virginia Tech, a team most people thought would, you know, be favored, rolled in, got the teeth knocked in, right? So has this happened before to a favorite coming into Syracuse under the Dino Babers administration? Yeah, it's already happened, okay? Forget their name Clemson, all right? Fellow ACC heavyweight, right? That's Virginia Tech and Clemson. Clemson, admittedly, yeah, sure. Coming off a national championship, also replacing a quarterback, also had their quarterback literally knocked out of the game on a weird hit. Like I know that's a routine hit, right? When you drag somebody down, but Kelly Bryant's head whipped into the turf. It's nauseating. He just passed out like on the field, just knocked cold. And when that happens and he's already got a bad ankle and you put the backup in on the road in a really loud environment, because when the Carrier Dome, yes, the unair-conditioned Carrier Dome. We are obligated as media members to point out Carrier Dome has no air conditioning. Can't say that without saying the other thing. Place is loud. Extremely loud. Oh, and Syracuse, they're improving. They've been improving for quite a while. They were begging for somebody. And Clemson just showed up wrong time, wrong night. Not actually that weird of an upset when you look at it, particularly considering the injuries Clemson had to suffer and all of the things that Syracuse does to put pressure on a defense. It just added up. It didn't feel like when you were watching it, it didn't feel or look all that weird until you remembered the names of the teams, right? So
I know exactly what you're saying, and I think I know which game you're going to as the actual surprise. Because, like, watching this one, it was just, well, Syracuse looks like the better team tonight. Like, I know Clemson's a better team overall, but that doesn't square with what my eyes are saying. So,
Because what happened? What happened here, right? One, you had a quarterback playing his ass off, right? And when that happens and you have a quarterback who's just on that night and he's getting good protection, he's got a receiver who's making plays for him, and they're running the ball steadily, that's bad for any defense. Remember, like, that's the key to beating Alabama. You're like, well, you need a quarterback to have the, like, night of his life. Well, that's the key to beating a lot of good teams. And Eric Dungy had a crazy night. Super efficient, made plays with his arm and with his legs. Like, just an played through a really nasty hit to his shin, which, to anyone who has stepped into their kid's room in the middle of the night and hit the toy chest right there, Eric Dungy did that, but with, like, a human being's helmeted, like, head hitting it. So, well done, Eric Dungy.
Which he does. It's kind of what he's known for, that and dunking grape juice on himself.
Yes, covering himself in grape soda during a video he recorded for his stats class, singing the praises of statistical analysis. Syracuse is a pretty good school. But this didn't feel like that. That didn't feel that weird. Now, which one do you think I'm going to say is the actual huge, massive stonking upset here?
I think it's time to consider Arizona State.
Yeah. Yeah, gonna make it like Tim and Eric long.
Because like this one, watching it unfold was like, how is this still happening? Like it wasn't the same feeling of like one team's outplaying each other. It was more of a what am I looking at kind of feeling.
And it never stopped. It never got better. Right? You kept waiting for Washington, for the talent gradient to kick in, for them to start to lean on Arizona State, for them to have receivers break open, for them to, I don't know, get a reverse for a touchdown that doesn't get called back for a holding penalty, which happened, except for the part where it doesn't get called back because it did get called back, where they looked obviously superior. Because the gag is, Arizona State's defense, they've been an atrocity for, what, 4 years running? 3 years running?
Mm-hmm.
I remember coming into the season looking at this stretch of their schedule, and we were saying, like, they're going to give up 50 points a game. They gave up 7 in this one.
And it wasn't, and that 7 wasn't until the very end.
Mm-hmm. And 7, and, like, even if Washington had made all its field goals, it would have been a mere 13.
Mm, Jason, did they make all their field goals?
They did not. One went to the left, and one went to the right. They were both about 25 yards away.
Mm-hmm. Let's just review all of the cardinal signs that you're not going to win as a heavy road favorite. One, it never turns the corner. Like, the game never turns the corner, right? You don't have a drive where you settle everything down, right? Two, opponent plays an atypical game. And the quarterback, three, the quarterback plays their best game imaginable, which Manny Wilkins was pretty dang good. Made a ton of plays in the first half and sort of managed their way down in the second. Three, you blow a huge fourth down or a huge third down late in the game, right? Crucial late down late in the game. In this case, were you actually up for the end of this game?
When Arizona State went for it?
Yeah, when they,
yeah, and it was what the fuck are you doing? Oh, I see what you're doing. Okay, you're just gonna chuck it, and it's gonna sail through one guy's hands into the other guy's hands, just how you drew it up. Got it.
So to review just exactly how many different ways Washington was screwed. By the way, when Washington finally scored in the fourth, you're going, oh well, and it's probably like a long pass to Austin Pettis or something, right? Or like a long run. No, against the trash Arizona State defense prior to this game, they were outstanding against Washington. They needed 14 plays and 71 yards. They needed an odyssey just to cut it to 13-7.
That when Washington turned into the other UW.
Yeah. Yeah, they turned into Wisconsin, just rumbling down the field, all sausage and anger, just that it took them that long. And then on fourth and three in the Washington 37, Manny Wilkins, instead of, I don't know, trying to run the ball, trying to throw short, throws through the hands of a receiver, I believe, if I'm remembering correctly, and hits CJ French Love.
I mean, everyone expected a quick kick. Like,
yeah, you
know, try to draw them off sides and then do a quick kick, pin them at the 10, and then just assume they're not going to finally score a touchdown. Nope, let's go for it. We're Arizona State.
Yeah, it was announcers calling the game. Snap happens. Voices rise alarmingly, like with actual alarm in their voice, like, and he's going to throw. Like,
it was a lot like. This was the 10-year celebration of this game, but it was a lot like LSU Auburn 2007 when everyone, expects the kick and hey, let's just go for it all right here.
Yeah,
you know, even the announcers are like, I don't know, but okay, it worked.
This is my favorite stat from this game. There were 4 penalties called for 20 yards. 1 5-yard penalty on ASU. 3 penalties for 15 yards on Washington. I don't think that means this game was played cleanly. I think this means at some point the officials saw this unfolding and were like, oh my fucking God, you guys come watch this. Hey, dead Washington over here.
Yeah. Washington, by the way, only like another sign. You're only 3 for 14. On third down. When you think of this Washington team, when you think of Chris Peterson, you think of machine-like efficiency. No, sir.
It was like a machine. Like, I when mean, you yeah. got to, you got to take back, you know.
Yeah.
Take back like to a, the shop.
Like a cornballer.
Every time.
By the way, it's not like Arizona State had an offensive explosion against them. Nope, only 40 yards rushing, y'all. Only it's like 240 through the air.
Yeah, I mean, this wasn't like a Georgia-Missouri shootout or anything like that.
Yeah, this the stats are on this are like if you actually played a NCAA game with 5-minute quarters. That's what it looks like.
Yeah, it really does. And the other thing, by the way, I think point 5 on my list that you're not going to win, you get iron with a kick. Like in a good clank too, a good insulting clong when you bang one off the upright and it doesn't bounce in, like that's it. When that happened, you're like, no, it's over.
Especially over. If you're Chris Peterson standing there and you remember 2010, oh, Boise State.
Wow.
When the only loss on your record was due to 2 short missed field goals.
Yeah, in Reno.
Just never kick.
Not that you get back to Reno recreationally a whole lot anyway, but I think he's taking overland roads to Tahoe if he goes, because he ain't going through Reno again. But yeah, this is the second half drive chart. If you want to know what an absolute stifling grappling match this entire game was, counter to every single game Arizona State has played for the last 3 years. All right. Second half drives. Arizona State punt. Washington missed field goal. Arizona State punt. It's a 5 plays. Arizona State just kept punting and they were happy to do it because their defense was playing on lock. Washington punt. Arizona State punt. Washington missed field goal. Arizona State fumble. Washington punt. On a 3-play negative 14-yard drive, Arizona State missed field goal. Washington, the aforementioned 14-play odyssey, just to pull something out of the Arizona State defense. And then Arizona State, they run the clock out with an 11-play drive. This is an AFC North game.
This is still not the game I thought you were gonna go with. It is a very good choice, but
see how good this weekend was.
The game I thought you were gonna go with, did not was not a ranked team losing to an unranked team.
Okay.
It did not, I would not say it significantly altered anybody's chances to make the playoff, because I don't think either of these teams, they were done with that all the same. But Louisville, you let Boston College score 45 points.
45.
And this was one of those games that we were watching it in the office. And somebody looks up and says, Boston College is, at the time, 42 points. And immediately you start running through all the alternative ways you can do that. You're thinking punt return. You're thinking pick six. You're thinking some sort of coupon program. You're thinking
21 safeties.
You're thinking your uncle died and he left you 14 points. You're thinking you rolled doubles three times. Nope. It's just six offensive touchdowns and a field goal to win the game. 555 yards of offense. They got outgained by Louisville, as well they should, because Louisville has Lamar Jackson and Boston College doesn't. But I, oh my God. Like, should Todd Grantham get a statue at Papa John's Stadium at this point? That's the other thing I didn't mention. This was in Kentucky. This wasn't in BC's home, the fiercely defended alumni stadium. No. Papa John himself may have had to watch this buttery explosion. Dear God.
Got some leaks at the slice. Got the big boxes leaking.
Oh, the pan boiled over again. Dudes will eat burnt cheese, though. Dudes love burnt cheese.
Just garlic butter trickling all over everything. And this is Bobby Petrino's new defensive coordinator hire, who underachieved at Mississippi State. And historically, that is saying something.
Ignoring your doctor's advice and eating double garlic knots? That's the dude!
Boston College now has 17 touchdowns on the year, meaning a third of their touchdowns for the entire year came against a team that entered the season ranked, what, like 15 or so? That's good stuff.
It's, I mean, Louisville has one ACC win at this point, and that's against a UNC team that is not very good. And looking at the rest of the schedule, I mean, you cannot look, based on this result, you cannot look at the rest of the Louisville schedule at Wake Forest, against Virginia, against Syracuse, and at Kentucky, and say with absolute confidence they're going to win six games. They probably will. It would be alarmist. Oh, I'm sorry. I forgot the at Florida State that precedes all that. They probably will still win six games, but you can't at this point say, oh, it's guaranteed, because you gave up 45 fucking points to Steve Adazio.
Yeah, I don't. They kept going back. This game, as it updated, ESPN kept interrupting with different updates for it, citing the new last game where Boston College scored X points. And it kept going up. Like, well, the last time Boston College scored 30 points against a ranked team was 2012. Well, the last time they scored 35 points against a ranked team was 2011. And finally, it kept getting ridiculous. Like, the last time Boston College scored 45 points, like, Jeff Jagosinski was the coach and Matt Ryan was the quarterback.
Hannibal was crossing the Alps with the elephants, who all loved, like, Boston College.
It just kept going further and further back, which had to be, I really wish that was piped into, like, Coach Sermon's, like, headset. Petrino might have done that, right?
Yeah, go ahead and tell him. Pipe it in there. Tell him how awful he is.
Tell him he's a dirty boy. He's a dirty bad boy.
You're losing to a coach who doesn't even have any hair. there's a really good post at Card Chronicle, our Louisville blog, today about how, like, you kind of just gets it, like, does Bobby Petrino know he's not an offensive coordinator? Like, does he know he's the head coach and the defense is technically his fault too, and, like, it's on him to fix this?
I would say no. He'll just throw him to the curb. Like, in case you doubt that the man just treats humans like garbage, there'll be no, like,
I don't know. I really believe in what he... No, no. Wow, he's gone. I don't... Who... New phone. Who dis? I don't... You want your stuff? I don't know who you are. There's a here. There's a white cardboard box waiting for you. Just put all your stuff in it and leave.
We're like, excited to welcome back Coach Grantham. He did a great job here at Louisville previously.
Like, is he such a robot that he cannot entertain new options, right? Like, it's like, who do you need a defensive coordinator? The last one.
I met Brian Van Gorder in this airport Applebee's, and he's very strong.
Oh, come on. Like Brian Van Gorder isn't just hanging out at an airport Applebee's. Looking for Miss Lonely Hearts. Need some places in the winter.
Where are you flying? Hey. Huh, me too.
Hey. Yeah, wow. Sir, you don't have a ticket to get on this airplane. Yes, I do. You met this young filly right here?
Well, that's like, funny, because I'm the pilot.
He kind of, you know what? I'm like, I could buy that. Like, yeah. Brian Van Gorder's rolling up being like, I'm flying the plane. I'd be like, you know, you kind of look like a pilot, actually.
As soon as it's off the ground, just floor it. Floor it.
In addition.
God, we haven't. There's so much we haven't got. I mean, there's the game that was maybe not the most surprising if you just look at the score. But when you consider how it proceeded, LSU coming back from. The number, I feel like you can say anything. You can be like, yep, LSU came back from a 38-point deficit to win 27-23. I'll be like, oh, the math sounds wrong, but it did feel that way. I'll buy it. Good job, LSU. Way to somehow get points taken away from Auburn. Like it's a karate tournament or something. Great work.
Barn cheating. That's the summary.
Also, should be pointed out that Aubie dressed up as the Troy mascot. And then Auburn immediately blew a 17-point lead.
Yeah, I mean, that's on Aubrey. We can't pin that on Aubie, though.
A 20-point
lead. Aubie's going to talk.
A 20-point lead. At the a 20-point lead, like, early in the second quarter. This game was so firmly in Auburn's control. And from... So it's 20-0 with about 13 minutes left in the second quarter. And for the rest of the game, Auburn scores 3 points. Auburn took what was looking like a super promising season, had beaten everybody they were supposed to beat easily, had played Clemson close, looked like they were going to smear LSU on the road, probably beat Arkansas and A&M as well, and just ease into that Georgia game with national playoff implications. And no, they're just like, they can still win the West, they still control their own destiny, but at this point, the team that could not score a single point in the second half, I'm going to go ahead and say that no, they don't.
I liked how Coach O went from fired after the Troy game to super fired when he's down 20-0 to Auburn to, you know, like, crowning shining moment. the proof of concept, the vision is finally real. You know, I mean, LSU fans weren't saying that, but like, he just went from like super super fired, why was he ever hired, like, this is what happens when you hire the interim and like you only hire the guy because he's from Louisiana, and now it's like, oh well, you just beat Florida, just beat Auburn.
Little tactical thing here too, you know what you can do to Auburn when they start to have to actually pass the ball? You can blitz them. Holy crap. That last series, and you go, you know, you should fall back in a shell and you should play prevent and you should just keep everything in front of you and that's how you're going to win. Oh, shit! Like, Dave Aranda's like, it got blitz! they were not going to sit back on their heels and just let Auburn get close. No, they've sent dogs after Jarrett Stidham. And do you know what Jarrett Stidham did? Jarrett Stidham, not a male man. He does not leap over fences to escape pressure. He lets the dogs take what they want.
He's the trainer, the police trainer, except he forgot to wear his suit that day. All I know is how to offer them my arms. Shit.
I'm
out of, I mean, after that Clemson game, he's out of arms, so.
Yeah. I'm Jarrett Stidham, and this is Jackass. This is Dog Attack.
Huh, yeah. That is kind of him being stuck in that backfield so far this year.
Yeah, no, they Dave Aranda, like, probably my favorite defensive adjustment of and finish of the weekend was watching LSU's defense just go full all-out blitzes on the final drive and absolutely shatter any chances Auburn had of coming back and winning that game after, of course, blowing that 20-point lead. 20 is a lot of points. 18 is quite a few points, too. Yes, I know, Big 12-point adjustment, but remember, at one point this weekend, West Virginia was down 18. Old Dana Holgorsen and the Mountaineer mascot sitting there at Evansville, Indiana, like, you know, Caesars, right? Just down on the chips, pile getting low. And you know what Dana and the West Virginia mascot did? Ordered another round of drinks and doubled down, son, because they overcome an 18-point deficit to beat Texas Tech in Morgantown. Deeply underrated game from this weekend, by the way. Like, massively entertaining. Will Greer's just gotten, like, so much better since he, you know, stopped taking steroids. We'll have a little schoolhouse, like,
substances. Tale of morality. Unknown substances, which have never been proven.
A little moral.
Fiber little One moral bars. Yep. Lots and lots of Fiber One bars. Mm-hmm.
You know, all you need to excel at quarterback is good hair.
And a regulated digestive system. Nobody wants to be bound up and backed up on the field.
No. So a little, like, little Miralax, some, like, Jesus hair, a good beard to go with it. Put yourself in the loving arms of an air raid offense. It'll take care of what ails you. They ended up beating Texas Tech after Texas Tech just, I think Texas Tech just ran out of points. They're just like, oh, that's our budget for this week. Shit, blew it early. Sorry, y'all.
West Virginia is definitely putting itself in prime position to be the team that will not sniff the playoff, which is fine. I don't think that was an expectation this year, but will just pummel an unsuspecting bowl opponent. Because their two losses this year are both 31-24 losses, and they are to Virginia Tech, I believe that was a neutral site game, and on the road against TCU. Those are two excellent teams to take down to the wire. And oh man, like, I feel very good about them getting some slapdick Power 5 conference that's, like, half interested in being there, and then they're like, holy shit, they put up 69 points? They scored 7 touchdowns, but then Dana Holgorsen took a knee on the last extra point because he thought 69 was awesome?
Which, that's gonna happen. You know who would go for 2? Seamless transition, by the way. Another team that I'm just calling, they're going to get in a bowl game and absolutely, like, kick, like, multiple dicks off of one person.
Yeah, this will look different, what you're talking about, but it'll be still painful.
Yeah, UCF. I think UCF, oh my God. Quietly putting together a splatterhouse classic of an offensive season. And I mean that for you, not them. Not them. No. They're coming out of that house with the chainsaw in the air, roaring and happy. Like, that's, you're the one who's in trouble if you face that. That team's going to get into a bowl game, and they're going to flatten somebody. And we're just going to say all that because, remember, the best offenses in Florida, as everyone predicted this year, UCF, USF, and Miami.
Miami, don't look at how it happened. Don't worry. Don't look too close. Okay, just buy the also, car. Isn't this car nice? Look, wouldn't you like to get a hand job in this nice Miami 2017? Yeah, you would, boy. Yeah, buddy. Just don't get put that Consumer Reports away. What are you doing? You want to get a hand job?
I'll be Miami guy. Yeah, bro. That's your hand job car. You got 4 cars. Okay, 4 car garage, house, mortgage is $5,000 a week.
Right. Okay. Car one, that's your hand job car. Car two, that's the car for moms. Love you, moms. Car three, that's your other hand job car for your second hand job lady. Car four, that's for church. Because again, love you, moms.
Yeah, and the motorcycle's for the feds because it's illegal to pull over a motorcycle for anything.
That's right.
Look it up. It's the law.
And then Mark Rick walks in the garage. What are all these vehicles for?
Now you're not having vaginal intercourse in the No, coach.
No, coach. See, we got a system. Can you just get in the station wagon?
We just made this up, but remember that Mark Rick did go to the University of Miami as an undergrad. So if you were like, which car is that? You're like, oh, that's the hand job car. And we're just like joking and just made it up. He'd be like, oh, yeah, we had those.
Different times
back then. But, you know, we had hand job cars, too. Oh, God. I'm so happy they won that game, though, because I've now adjusted to the notion that there are teams who only serve as supporting actors in college football, right? And they play their role as well as possible. They're not going to necessarily win, but they're the Brian Dennehy's, if you will, of college football. They are the find a more contemporary example of a quality supporting actor who's, you know, they're never going to get the main bit, but they're always going to make what they're in better.
Yeah. Georgia Tech falls into that category. Indiana, yeah, you fall into that category as well. Oh, your death scene. It was beautiful, especially because we all thought you had already died, and then you came back, and then you accidentally shot yourself right in the gut.
Indiana is a Wilhelm scream.
No, they're Sean Bean, man. Sean Bean, you're like, oh, man, he's so cool. I hope he doesn't die. He's gonna die. Spectacularly, in a lot of cases. As they did against Michigan. Georgia Tech also fits into that category because they're going to frustrate you. They're going to cut block you. They're going to be ruthless and charismatic while seemingly having nothing. They managed to take you deep in the fourth quarter. And then Miami just, I don't know, runs a bunch of screens, gets down the field, throws one pass, and wins the whole game. Yay! That's awesome.
Just like we drew it.
Yeah, just exactly like we drew it up. They asked Mark Richt about it after the game, and he's like, well, yeah, that's one way to win a football game. Which is coach speak for, yeah, we need to work on winning games another way.
Yeah, man, the hand job, I think somebody cut the brakes on the hand job car, because it was all over the road today.
That's fine. That's how the system works.
Listen, in both of these situations, it is not the first 99% of the experience that matters. It's the last percent, and that is where Miami finishes.
Means South Carolina, Tennessee was a failed hand job.
That was just dry humbug. Just way too much of it.
Yeah, if you are a Tennessee season ticket holder, I have to ask you, why? Think of what you've seen this year. You have seen, you've seen an easy win over Indiana State. That's great. That's awesome. You've seen a win over UMass. Sure, only 17 points were scored by Tennessee, but it was a win. You saw no points scored against Georgia. Listen, Georgia looks like they can absolutely make the college football playoff, or at least contend for it. They, you know, I get the East-West divide, but take Georgia outside of that unfortunate context, and they look amazing. And then you saw South Carolina 15, Tennessee 9.
Got to see a lot of kicking.
You did
a lot of good quality kicking. You know, with the U.S. out of the Men's World Cup, not going to see a lot of kicking coming up. Tennessee is filling the void. Appreciate that. Very patriotic of Tennessee.
It's, okay, well, here's the good news. If you are a Tennessee season ticket holder, you don't have to see them lose to Bama because that's in Tuscaloosa this year. So, cool.
You don't have to see them lose to Kentucky.
Also true. And you don't have to see them. Nah, they'll probably beat Mizzou. Just because Missouri doesn't want to be here anymore. And I, you know what? I respect that. I respect that Missouri is just like, my dad says I have to be here, but he didn't say I had to try. Fuck you.
What do you have to do? Just try for a quarter. Just try for a quarter and then, you know, we'll get out of here.
And then he says we can get Slurpees. And yeah. And he gets high with me. I love my dad.
Spencer described Mizzou as the fighting video game button masher.
Like totally the button masher.
Which I think is perfect. Like the most obnoxious person to play. Like you're playing your Soul Calibur, Street Fighter, whatever, and you know, like I can beat all my friends, and then like someone picks it up, they've never played it before. Like damn, this is harder than this is. And it, and then, like, after they catch you a few times, it's just like, okay, I get this. All right.
Yeah. You're like, wow, man, you know what? They're going to mention this so many times. They'll be like, you know, Mizzou had a 1,000-yard rusher, a 1,000-yard receiver, and a 3,000-yard passer. And I'm like, yeah, they should have. You know why? They had to throw the ball 40 yards every time just to have a prayer. They had to, like, that was it. That's all they had. Other teams were like, I don't know, give them this. Just let them have this. Let them have this. Let them take it. I mean, that's and button mashing, too. That's what now the Cal's Sonny Dykes experiment ended, right? And we have Justin Wilcox, who apparently good enough to just beat you 37-3 out of nowhere. Hey, Cal. Thoroughly. Something's wrong with Luke Falk, man.
This is the year that I really wish Border War was still a thing. Because it would be really useful to say, hey, who is the worst Power 5 team?
Yeesh.
Also, button mashing. Button masher versus button masher. The results are random, the tactics are nonsensical, and the outcomes completely arbitrary.
Well, let's come on. Kansas is button mashing on a controller that's not plugged in.
I think these two in a fighting game, it would look more like a dance battle. Like neither of you are actually trying to make contact. You're both doing capoeira by yourselves.
If Missouri is the button masher, Kansas is the person who only knows low block and it's just staying in low block the whole time.
Kansas is just doing backflip.
backflip.
Kansas is building up the special meter and that's all.
I know low block. Low block is Florida. Florida is just low block. Low block. Low block. Low block. Low block. Low block.
We're not going to talk about Florida.
I don't see much blocking going on when Florida's playing.
the blocking's very low. It's happening at a level you cannot possibly discern with human eyes.
Low block, that's Georgia Tech. They'll come right at them knees.
Listen, if you want to talk about something unpleasant, I will make you do this week's ad read.
You know what? I think we should go ahead and do those.
Great. I'm going to let you start.
Yeah, this one's going to be deeply unpleasant. As you know, Ryan has decided that we're going to raise money for disaster relief. Various sites at this point, because it's a busy season for that, particularly with hurricane. And thus far, where are we at in terms of donations and such, Ryan? Just around.
We circa. Are like probably at like 24,000 or something like that.
Okay, to show you how committed I am to this cause, I'm going to read something that's deeply painful, because Ian paid money for charity, and for that, I'll agree to the terms of the contract and read what I'm supposed to read here, Ian. You magnificent dick of a man. DC is a great city that I love to visit. Bob Dylan is an amazing recording artist. Wahoo wah. He made me read that.
Now, the Virginia part wasn't so bad, was it?
Yeah, no, out of those three things, that part went down fine.
Yeah, no, wahoo wah. I felt like doing the Lego Batman when he says sorry, right? Like, DC. Like, I can't get it out of my mouth. Bob Dylan is amazing. No.
Like, Virginia's definitely going to win more games than Florida this year.
Definitely. They're 5-1.
Yep.
Just like Kentucky. They're 5-1.
These are real things. We don't make jokes.
Let's see. I'm also obligated. Ben, thank you, Ben, for your kind donation. I'm supposed to do this. My request is that Spencer give a very brief assessment on who he thinks will win the World Series this year and why.
So let's start here. Can you name how many teams that are still in contention for the World Series? Can you name
one? I can name one, and I have a good guess at another.
Okay. Go ahead.
One. The guess is the Chicago Cubs.
The Cubs are, yes, still in the playoffs as of this recording.
And the other one I'm pretty sure is Houston. That's the other one I know.
Correct.
I know
that. Correct.
Okay. And do you have any other questions?
No.
As a Houston Astros expert that
no,
I am.
No, no. So now, okay. I mean, so now I only really need you to tell me if the Cubs are going to repeat or if the Astros are going to win the World Series.
The Astros are going to win the World Series, Ryan. And here's why. I can turn this into a positive, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Houston is our nation's greatest city for a number of reasons, okay? And I will list them as best I can. At Cream Burger, you can get a Frito pie as a side dish to your hamburger. Frito pie as a side dish. We sing the praises of the cookout all the time for offering like corn dogs as a side. A degree and step beyond that in the evolution of main dishes as side dishes. Getting your Frito pie and putting it on the side as a side dish. It's something else entirely. It's impossible to go to the city without gaining at least 15 pounds. It is ugly. It's not a pretty city, and yet it continues to attract people just like daily. Like, it just won't stop growing. It just flooded, and I bet it's still growing. It'll come out of this quarter, and they'll be like, Houston made money. I have no idea how this happened. Absolutely none. It is the setting for one of America's finest movies ever, Urban Cowboy. And one of the best villains ever, Scott Glenn, the wiriest man in the history of humanity, wearing a black hat because why be subtle? Filmed at Gillies, home of the original Mechanical Bull. Absolutely magnificent. Oh, what else about Houston? Oh, yeah, it's the home of like one of the greatest rap acts of all time, UGK. It's the home of Fat Pat. It Houston, the home of Towns Van Zandt, who sang about drinking cough syrup before any rapper did. Which has to be some sort of great cultural accomplishment. I don't know quite how to score that.
Ben Franklin did that, actually.
I would bet Ben Franklin totally invented lean. Completely. Just,
right? That was the one he kept to himself. He said, nah, this shit's too good. I'm not sharing this.
Just in the baby bottle, like in the Sippin' on Some Scissor video. Mm-hmm. Just Ben tipping at the court in France. We can probably find that, right? Like some in the annals of like the French royal family, we can go back and see like, oh, look, man, there's totally like a recipe for lean in here. This is incredible.
It's delicious.
It's delicious. So, yeah, that's it. Do I know anything about the baseball team? Not a damn thing. Save this. They have like two happy Mexican dudes like dancing in belted jeans and button downs as like their celebratory clip they play when they win. And I'm all for that set to Festive Banda. So that's why I think Houston will win the World Series. You have facts. I have extremely subjective opinions about a city that never gets enough credit nationally. So I believe Houston will win the World Series.
I'm going to do my couple and then we'll close with Jason's. First, this donation is on behalf of the entire staff over at herloyalsons.com. And as such, they'd like us to know that they donated to the Miami Diaper Bank, which aids the tiniest victims of Hurricane Irma, a handful of older Notre Dame fans, and the Florida offense. Do Irish fans watch other college football teams? The answer may surprise you. Our podcast at HerLoyalSons.com provides Notre Dame analysis missing from the shutdown full cast and revels in the success that cast-offs Charlie Weiss and Malik Zaire found in Gainesville. So come visit herloyalsons.com, home of rational takes from the most irrational fans. Honestly, I have nothing but good wishes for Notre Dame this season, because this means you're just going to lock Brian Kelly up for a long deal. You're just going to go ahead and lock that. He's going to get the lifetime marriage contract deal. It's going to be wonderful. You're going to be stuck with him for God knows how long. And you'll look back and you'll say, well, why? I don't know. We won 10 games in 2017. Cool. Do you know how I know this? Because in 2016, you gave him a 6-year contract extension. Did they win the national title? No. Did they play for the national title or make the playoff? No. They went 10-3. That's all it takes to get an extra 6 fucking years at Notre Dame. 10 wins. So yeah, I hope you know what? I hope you get to 11 because I'm excited to see if that means 16 years.
I like the Brian Kelly, like the shots between him and his bosses. They've been, you know, I think passive aggressive enough to where you could see him in the statement coming out and saying like, it's a bittersweet moment for me extending myself here at Notre Dame. I thought we had to do it. Just got it over with. Rip the Band-Aid off.
I know that we are 10 towards anti-Fighting Irish here, and I would like to say a few things tilting in the other direction. Mostly that we have not experienced the college football playoff in a year where Notre Dame is in contention. Even when they're good, they're not quite good enough to be in that conversation. It's a really interesting question because we all start the year saying like, well, we've got 5 power conferences and we've got 4 slots to fill, and maybe there's a Houston or a Navy or a USF or somebody that like, or a Boise State that will maybe be in that talk, but probably not. Notre Dame is the thing that can make this really go fucking south quickly, especially because I can envision a world where Georgia wins the rest of its games leading into the SEC championship game. Notre Dame also wins the rest of its games, but obviously doesn't have a conference championship to go to. At this point, that would mean they beat USC, they beat NC State, they beat Wake Forest, they beat Miami, they beat Navy, and they beat Stanford. That is a hell of an impressive 6-game stretch if they pull it off to close the season. And then I can see Georgia, I don't know, getting destroyed in the SEC championship game. And then I can see the wonderful conversation unfolding. Should Georgia, loser of the SEC championship game, and only with 1 loss, get a spot in the playoff? Or should Notre Dame, with arguably a more full resume, but a loss to that Georgia team, should they get the spot? And I'm only here for fighting and misery, and Notre Dame, you can help me make that a reality. So yes, I hope you do well for the rest of the season.
I think I got a Notre Dame scenario that's even better.
Please.
So Notre Dame only plays 12 games. The Big 12 used to only play 12 games. In 2014, they missed the playoff partly because they only played 12 games. Now the Big 12 champion will play 13 games. What if...
Oh God!
Big 12 champion.
Oh God!
Say TCU. 12-1 TCU misses the playoff at the expense of 11-1 Notre Dame.
Oh God! It's gonna happen. You just said it, so now it's gonna happen.
Yeah, because if you go look and you compare schedules and resumes and like, and you do them how the committee does, number of bowl teams played, number of likely top 25 teams played. They're going to be pretty close.
Oh, God. I also have to give a few shout-outs to Greg Cavell, Dennis Lay, John Newhouse, and Eric Biesbrock. Thank you for donating. You are all, by proxy now, Notre Dame fans. I'm sorry, but that's the way it works. Jason has a couple others, and then we'll talk about something else stupid.
Yeah, that's for sure. From Adam, I know that Florida will somehow keep winning, beat UGA, and win the East. End quote. So I've been trying this gimmick on this show for the last few weeks that I'm the Florida defender homer fan, like the voice of the Florida fan who thinks this is all actually very good and appreciates the 3 national titles that this team has won in our lifetimes. That's pretty hard at this point, man. Like, I don't know. I think I get it. I think I'm starting to see the other side. Because to be quite honest, I don't see this team making a bowl game right now. Like,
I agree with you.
Like the Florida Gators have applied with the NCAA for an exemption to become bowl eligible at 5-6, which would get them into the Independence Bowl. Like that, like, nah, bro, that ain't. But 4 years after 4-8? Nah.
I think they should get 4-7 because they did have a game that got canceled due to a hurricane. And if they have the APR scores, they think 4-7 should be good enough.
Yeah, well, you don't have the APR.
Well, so. Shit.
I'm gonna enjoy when we get the, because this is, I wrote about this today, but it's pretty much all you can write about Florida at this point, that the cycle never changes. Just get a coach who's going to be given 4 years to do a mediocre job with the little shadow puppet kabuki drama of, we'll replace a coordinator in the final year. It'll make a difference and change everything. And there won't be time to fix it.
Were either of the coordinators good? No.
No, they weren't. Did they have outdated ideas? Spotty resumes.
Oh, what's that? You don't want Smarties for dessert? Good news, we have Runts.
But, Adam stipulated Florida beats UGA, wins the East. So a lot of people have already given up on the cocktail party this year because Georgia has been good and Florida has been bad. Like, as if that always matters when it comes to this game. I'm not making a prediction. I'm just saying. I think I would never make any sort of a confident prediction on this game. It is, you can go back and look it up. This is the most unpredictable major rivalry in the country.
Here's the second part. How do you get to the wins the East part? Because right now, Florida has two losses in conference, and Georgia has none. Are we saying that Georgia's going to lose to Auburn? I guess.
Could. At that Auburn.
Could. Although, there is an entire, like, ream of notes, like tomes of notes full of stuff Kirby Smart has as, let's see, the defensive coordinator who shut down Auburn in recent Iron Bowls. Yeah, I think he's going to be familiar, because I was thinking the same.
I don't know. Gus has some notes too.
Does he?
Well, I mean, he used to. He might have lost him or something.
I mean, listen. Let's examine the world in which Florida beats Georgia. Yeah, that opens things up in the SEC East. The problem is, I think it's for Kentucky.
At this point, with my own ambitions, hopes, and dreams long since scuttled and lying at the bottom of the metaphysical ocean, I'm entirely positive and happy and content with Kentucky blowing through the rest of this division, having the best season in the Kentucky Wildcats, like, history, basically. That'd be fine. I'm okay with it. That'd be great. Also, who's their only loss? It'd be to Florida. I'd be like, yeah, you know what? I'm going to let you have the best season, and you're still going to have, like, a baffling loss just sitting there.
I like the idea of Texas A&M tagging in as the SEC East champ, the only team that's like, stand back. We'll handle this. But we have experience. We know how to stand up to a bully. We'll handle this. Don't hurt yourselves. Because it felt like A&M was the only team all year that actually wanted a piece of Bama, and not in squirrely underdog kind of way, just kind of like, well, we're here to do what we're here to do, and
hey, fuck you, whatever happens. Arkansas scored 9 points, you asshole.
Arkansas got a large piece of Bama, I'll grant. I think what we have, Adam, we tried, what we ended up with was Florida in third in the SEC East behind A&M and Kentucky, but at least we got it out of Georgia's hands, okay? So that's something.
And now you have maybe the most diabolical read we've received throughout this whole process. Please, go ahead.
From Chris Pendley. Is Will Muschamp the head coach Tennessee deserves?
No! No!
I mean, if you can't beat him, and you can't, repeatedly.
So, Coach Puncho Boom is clearly making a tour of the SEC East, having already collected two badges as the head coach at two different schools. Adding a third, got to be next on the... I mean, where is he going to go? He can't leave the division. There's a court order, right?
That ankle monitor, so, it's pesky.
It only functions in like a 6-state radius.
He's tried to chew through it, but it's made for rhinos or something.
I mean, look, for, bowl game, how far did he get? Birmingham, okay? So... The thing just does not have much of a range to it. So what is Will Muschamp most known for in the Tennessee rivalry?
Anger?
Well, as far as his record against Tennessee.
Oh, just the lack of a positive digit in the loss column.
Yeah. All he does is make Tennessee lose. Therefore, yeah, he's the perfect head coach for the Tennessee.
Can I do this? I have an alternative idea. If Tennessee were real crafty and wanted to use the resources that they had at hand in order to cut down at the margins and eliminate the problem of Will Muschamp coaching against them in the SEC East, what would make Will Muschamp happiest in life? Answer, running a gas station poorly. Okay. Where can he get his very own gas station? That's right, the Haslam family, who own Pilot, one of the largest gasoline station providers in America.
It's called Pilot because this gas is for planes. That's not true, Will. We keep telling you. You gotta stop fueling up planes.
Now, I don't think just one gas station. I think you give him three. Because, remember, football's a three-phase game. We just say, hey, listen, Will, it's just a three-part problem. There's offense, defense, and special teams. And in one case, there's going to be one big, shiny Pilot. Flawless. Going to have, like, bathrooms you'd eat out of the urinals, right? Like, just amazing, clean, spotless customer service, top to bottom. That's the defense one, right? That's the one Will Muschamp actually works on. Then there'll be one that's on fire. That's the offense. It'll just be perpetually on fire. Don't worry about that. It's on fire. And then there'll be special teams. That'll be fine. That'll be fine. A lot of the little Debbies and stuff will be stale, but otherwise,
it only takes cash, which is a little bit of a pain, but it's fine.
Yeah, that's fine. Why does it only take cash? Because I don't trust the government. That's Will Muschamp. Just give him three gas stations, let him run them poorly, and he'll just leave football. He'll be that would make him so happy.
Before we depart, I would like to acknowledge that, yes, Rutgers won a Big Ten game. Hadn't happened in, I think, 2 years or so. But, Illinois, you understand what it is to exist in a world where, listen, we hear so much about income inequality in this world, homelessness, the 1%. Illinois decided to do something the fuck about it. They said, listen, this Rutgers team, which has only beaten Morgan State this year, which lost to Eastern Michigan. Like, you know what? Let's put a W on that schedule. And they did. And you know what, Illinois? You're not going to get a lot of praise for that. And maybe that's because you have a coach with an insanely high buyout because you think for some reason the NFL will want him back. And you're not wrong. The NFL is very dumb. But you did a good thing for another person. I don't know why, but you did, and I'd like to acknowledge that. On the other hand, Ohio State, total monsters. Total monster assholes. 8 touchdowns against Nebraska. How could you?
Like the assholes of monsters.
Think about how much corn you consume Ohio State in its various forms.
Giving a whole new meaning to Pacific Rim. God.
Jesus Christ.
I do want to acknowledge a couple of other things while we're rolling through acknowledgements at the very tail end of this podcast. I want to acknowledge that the Michigan State Spartans are 5-1. I don't know how it happened, and neither do you. Let's not pretend. But they're 5-1.
My single favorite, my tweet of the weekend from this past week was Robbie Callen said, both Michigan State and Minnesota look like they're point shaving. And which, I mean, if you're in that kind of tangle, the Spartans are winning, bro.
It's real hard to fight that when you get the fourth quarter 21-point burst against Michigan State. Like, oh, crap! Numbers ain't adding up, boys. Need to put a few in the end zoner. PJ's losing an arm. I would also like to go ahead and congratulate Texas. Because I know you lost by 5 points to Oklahoma in a game where everybody thought you were losing by 50. Ellinger's coming along. I am the Texas optimist this year. Not just because I'm placing some sort of Svengali-like faith in what Tom Herman can do as a coach, but there's talent on this roster. They played really well. I'm gonna continue to sunshine pump Texas just a little. Not that the aristocrats need all the help, but just to state factually that this is a team that's improving and performed better than people thought they should have. Speaking of teams performing well beyond what they thought they should have, Utah, with no semblance of an offense, managed to, I don't know, almost beat USC. And they did the right thing, if you did not see this. On the road, after scoring a TD where an extra point would have tied at the end of regulation, Utah went for it. Kyle Whittingham just said, fuck it. We're going to win it or lose it right here, one play. And they lost. And you know what? That's, you got to, at one point, accept that the ends really aren't what you're doing it for. What you're doing it for is philosophy. And Utah, team perpetually with nothing to lose, playing USC in LA. I really love the call. I don't really care whether they got it or not, because that's the kind of thing that later on will reap benefits by people just being absolutely terrified of you. I'm completely with it. Sometimes you got to lose a fight to win two or three down the road. That's what I'm calling this, y'all. So well done, Utah. You won 27-28 this week.
Did y'all know that Jim Mora can see the future? I just learned this. I'm not making this up. Because, UCLA lost badly to Arizona, 47-30, dropping them to 3-3 on the season. And I think with just one conference win, over Colorado. This is the last thing Jim Mora tweeted on October 9th. So a week ago Monday, when most people will hear this, before that Arizona game. Only at UCLA, go Bruins. And then that is a manual retweet of the sun setting over UCLA campus. He knew he was going to die. He knew he was done. He saw it in the stars, because that's what the sun is. A big star that's slowly burning and somehow sustaining life and will eventually take it from us, including Jim Mora.
Another thing, Jim Mora didn't really foresee the meteor that would hit him, because that meteor 3 weeks ago was a backup. That'd be Khalil Tate. If you're not following Khalil Tate, I'm just going to let you in on Khalil Tate. Khalil Tate is small. Khalil Tate is essentially a neutrino. He is a tiny little, often invisible thing that can pass through lead, linebackers, defensive tackles, defensive ends, safeties, concrete, thousands of miles of earth, anything. A theoretical particle that, has over 200 yards rushing in consecutive games, which I think the last quarterback to do that was David. The original David. It's astonishing to watch him and what he's doing right now. And it's also kind of a shame, because most people are only seeing the box score. Dude split safeties. My favorite run in football, right? When somebody is so fast that they hit between the hashes and both safeties look at the other and go, oh, God. There's 15 feet between the two of us, and we're not making it.
Yeah, but while you're right, and while the nuclear comparisons are apt, The UCLA defense is one of those uninhabited islands where you test these bombs.
A neutrino can also pass through crepe paper, okay? It doesn't have to do anything outlandish. Sometimes it just goes through a nice silk kimono, all right? That's what Khalil Tate.
Hello, we're the UCLA defense. We thought it'd be fun to see if we could make a football pinata. Hit us! Candy!
Yeah, that's That also got Atlanta Falcons defensive end, former UCLA Bruin, Takaris McKinley, to tweet, UCLA football doesn't lose to Arizona, ... Straight embarrassing. Which, if anyone knows anything about blowing a massive lead...
Why we gotta do this?
I know.
He wasn't there, okay? And look, now they're losing to the Dolphins, so the Super Bowl's not gonna be an issue.
I was gonna say, we got him caught up.
We've interested him in this newsletter.
Anything he missed, he's all caught up on now.
Yeah, Khalil Tate is absolutely unreal. My final shout out is to Rod Gilmore, because Rod Gilmore, if you haven't listened to Rod Gilmore is the most conservative announcer in football. You know what's dangerous? Everything. Everything will kill you, and everything is too risky. It's too dangerous. Rod Gilmore is the little video game companion in the side who's always saying things like, I wouldn't go in there. It's dark, and this is a video game. There's probably bad things in there. You should just stay out here and see if you can find collectibles. Like, he'd be the guy at GTA who's like, hey, you want to go hang out with that gangster? He's like, no, he does crime. You should go find a beverage and maybe see if you can buy a new shirt with some of those credits you earned from performing good deeds.
You don't go in the forest until you have a shield.
That's him. He's the video game assist set on the most, like, school marmish, nanny-ish, worried, anxious. Like, there is no amount of risk in football that Rod Gilmore embraces.
Are you sure you don't want to take the driving tutorial? It's recommended to take the driving tutorial before entering a vehicle.
I would take the run pass option tutorial.
You just got to throw it away. Like, straight drop back pass on first down. He's like, oh, whoa. I don't like it. I don't like the call. Like, this situation happened. Mark Richt, from time to time, both at Georgia and now at Miami, sees the value of trying an aggressive onside kick, right? There are some people who onside kick every play in football. Kevin Kelly, for instance, does it 90 to 95% at Pulaski Academy in Arkansas. It's this famous case of how risk is generally mismanaged in the sport of football, okay? Mark Richt, being real wacky for a big college coach, tries one, I don't know, once a year, twice a year, coming out of the second half. He's good for one or two. And it's great. It's worked before. It's failed before. Like anything you try. Not a real high percentage play to begin with. So coming out against Georgia Tech, to be fair, a team known for mobbing the ball, owning the clock, sucking all time of possession up, and taking the air out of a game, right? In a close game, Miami tries something which I think is fairly sensical. They try for an onside kick, right? It doesn't go real well. The guy who's closest to the ball, for some reason, just kind of stares at it like he doesn't know it's live. And then on the chase, if you watch the clip, the Georgia Tech player picks it up, and the guy, rather than pursuing, just falls down in despair, knowing that he's given. He just, like, goes belly first, like, oh, man.
Listen, sometimes these companion missions, it's just the computer doesn't know what to do, okay?
It's dangerous. And when this happened, the noise Rod Gilmore made as it happened was like, and then a brief moment of getting his composure, and his first comment was, I don't like it. We're like, no.
I bet Rod Gilmore sees Taco Bell commercials and he's like, oh God, they made the shell a fried egg. I have to go lie down for a week.
I would prefer not to live moss when I can live the exact amount I am currently living.
Rod Gilmore, live Menos.
I just love...
He's
my favorite announcer for all these reasons, and I know we've talked about this before, but just how he keeps winding up in these predicaments where poor Rod Gilmore has to be the voice of reason who's being totally ignored, just the chaperone who is, you know, the kids are the kids have taken over the school bus entirely.
I'm just having Rod, like, the minute they lined up and the kick went onside, I started laughing out loud, knowing that several blood vessels in Rod Gilmore's head just blew up. A cold sweat broke out, right? He's like, oh, I got to go get my backup suit now. Because you know he travels with, like, the backup suit, right?
I mean, I think you got to punt to the aliens here. You can't put Randy Quaid in a plane. Oh, jeez.
Now, there's a full list of things I want to, like, enjoy with Rod Gilmore. Like, let's watch an episode of Magic School Bus, right? this bus, oh, it's flying. This is not.
Well, that's not sealed for water. Safe. That's not waterproof at all. I think the school bus should go to the library.
You know what it was? You know what broke him? He played at Stanford.
Mm-hmm.
In the early 80s.
Mm-hmm.
He was on the field for the play.
Yes, he was.
The craziest play in the history of American football.
Where I'm convinced, by the way, you can divine the basic DNA of someone's essence, right? By watching that play. And there are one of two reactions. There's, this is the greatest thing I've ever seen, go Bears. Or there is, oh, God. That's it. That play snapped his soul.
I mean, you know, it, like we say all this lovingly, but it would be easy for someone to judge Rod Gilmore. You know, oh, he's so boring. He's so conservative. Tell you what, bro, you try and live through that and you come out and say, go deep and all that stuff. See how tough you are then. No, you'll be trying to punt on first down, too.
I think we should keep the band in a different stadium altogether just to be safe.
Why would you elbow the trombone player? Because it's festive, Rod. It's festive. He's on the field. It's live. What's he doing there? I just won. I'm going to elbow drop the trombone player.